This is our number.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, it is a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. And yesterday I was kind of lamenting because I mentioned that I used to drink just a ridiculous... In fact, I bet you could trace my sleep problems back to when I was 14, 15 years old. I took this old utility room in our basement, made it my bedroom, and there's a little old refrigerator in the basement. And I would keep Coca-Cola, regular Coke, in that fridge. And that was when I was, I was working about 50, 60 hours a week and going to college full time when I was 15, 16 years old. So my classes were 7:30, 8:30, 9:30 a.m. Then I'd go to the print shop. I'd work 8, 10, 12 hours a day. Then I'd come home, do a little homework, and I'd start drinking Coca-Cola because I only had about 3 hours a night for sleep. And I needed the caffeine. Well, that started horrible sleep pattern very early on for me. And then when I was in my 20s, I switched to Diet Coke because of the calories. But I would drink 6 to 8 Diet Cokes a day. And I've been doing much better. I'm down to about 2 a day, but I know that they're still not healthy. So anyway, yesterday, somebody had given me a orange vanilla seltzer. It was, I tried it, well, during a commercial break. It was awful. It was awful. Have you ever had that orange vanilla?
I haven't had that specific one.
I'm not
a big fan of the flavored waters.
And so then we just started talking on air, and Sean DeTore said, there's one that I must try, and you brought it for me today. It's very sweet.
I did. That's from my personal collection of flavored soda waters. It's the Safeway Select. It's one of my favorites. It's lime flavored. I also love the lemon flavor.
Lime signature seltzer water.
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
Wow, that sounded good.
Okay. I'm thirsty.
Here we go. It's okay.
You got to say it's better than that orange vanilla.
The orange vanilla was vile.
I've got one of those in my fridge. There was a bunch dropped off here. I don't know why, so I'm tempted to try that tonight.
Yeah.
You don't care for it?
It's okay. I'm sure it's an acquired taste. When I first started drinking Diet Coke, I thought that was vile for about a week, and then I...
You powered through so that you could be addicted?
Yes. Yeah. I just made myself drink Diet Coke because at first... Now regular Coke is too sweet to me. I don't like drinking regular.
Oh, it leaves that sugar coating on your teeth, and
I
hate it.
I don't like that.
What if I brought you one soda water a day for 7 days?
I'm a big boy. You don't need to do that. You mean one of these?
Or maybe a different flavor, but of the same brand. I don't know. I'm not a rich man, but for you, Dory, I'll dip into my savings.
You know what, Sean?
What?
You're rich when it comes to friends.
Dory, you're too good to me.
Is it
refreshing?
I think if I just kept drinking one flavor, I'd acquire a taste for it.
Okay.
So I'll just go pick up some of this. Because I got to get, you know, my daughters, they all like that. What's that trendy seltzer?
LaCroix?
LaCroix,
yeah.
That one's a little too artificial flavoring to me. It tastes it's a little too sweet.
I tried drinking that when we were down in the desert. We had the whole family down in the desert. It was 100 degrees last month in Palm Desert. And we always go to the Ralph's. There in Palm Desert. So we got a bunch of LaCroix because we had a condo with a full kitchen. And I tried drinking the LaCroix.
You got to try my Crystal Light because Crystal Light is more like drinking juice.
Oh, did you see the listener comments when you mentioned Crystal Light yesterday?
No, I didn't.
The listeners were not impressed with your beverage of choice.
Deal with it.
Yeah. Okay.
But you know what the problem is that part of your addiction is the caffeine, and none of these that you're trying.
I know, but I got to get off the caffeine, too.
It's true.
So that's another part of it. So.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love.
By the way, did you see New Coke is back?
I did see that.
Yeah, they're bringing back New Coke, which was one of the great marketing disasters of the late 20th century. So, okay, enough about beverages. Let's get to our fastest 15 here. And there is a big issue with toll lane cheaters in our state. Chris Ingles over at King 5 News. He talked about how the toll lane cheaters are costing the state thousands of dollars a year. He got this through a public records request.
Records request show there were nearly 34,000 obstructed license plates on the Narrows Bridge in a two-year period ending in 2018. There were more than 54,000 unreadable plates on 520 and 4,200 on Interstate 405, where motorists pass through multiple camera systems, increasing chances the system can pick up a plate number.
So people are intentionally doing things to their license plates so the cameras can't read them. And in other states, this isn't currently allowed in Washington. In other states, they can use the cameras to track down the violators. We cannot.
Photographs from other states show the colorful ways that some people cover their plates and avoid paying the tolls. These photos that show the entire vehicle can be used to identify the worst offenders. In Washington, the law prohibits police from even viewing toll camera photos.
We would not provide them the image, but we could say we're seeing this type of behavior at this location.
Okay, so they can read the plates to charge you a toll, but the cops can't try to identify the toll violators through the camera images. This is one that I've always been really torn on because I hate giving the government money, and I refuse to drive in, I refuse to use 520, I refuse to use the hot lanes on 405 or 167, I do not plan to use the Seattle Tunnel once the tolling is implemented there. I think the government gets enough of my money. But I know some people, don't we have a colleague on air who brags about using the toll lane all the time?
Brags about it?
Yeah.
About using it or tricking it or what?
About abuse, driving in the carpool lane.
Oh, like, carpool lanes, yes. Yeah.
Is that Curly?
Well, I believe Todd as well.
Curly and Todd. Okay. Here's the thing. These toll lanes, the hot lanes on 405, they're illegal. They didn't meet the standards. They should be gone. So I think the government is morally in the wrong just having those toll lanes. I still cannot get myself to drive in the carpool lane when I don't have a carpool. And mainly because if I do get pulled over, then I got to give the government, you know, $180 or whatever it is. And I'm so loath to give the government money. And then there is a part of it, and this isn't a criticism of Curly or Todd or anybody else who does it. But just for me personally, I have trouble with my fellow motorists if I'm using a lane I shouldn't be using when most of them are abiding by the law. But on a moral basis, when the lanes are illegal to begin with on 405, and I told you the story a few months ago, they caught a guy who had this, it was almost like a motorized window shade. And it would roll down and just put a black covering over his license plate when he would go through the toll cameras. And then he could flip a button in his car and it would roll back up. So there are a lot of people who go to elaborate lengths to, you know, cheat the system. But here in Washington, it turns out that it's costing the state a fortune, $170,000 in lost tolls, according to that King 5 report. Up next in the Fastest 15, I mentioned a couple of days ago that half of Americans are one paycheck away from financial disaster. They do not have enough saved up if they miss a paycheck to get by and pay their bills. And I mentioned that that's if I do something else professionally, and this is the one thing that could pull me away from wanting to do radio forever. But I would be passionate about working with young people, with people in high school, college, 20-somethings, and work with them, and if they're young enough, and their parents, to get started on a plan so you're not one paycheck away from disaster. This is something that I've been really diligent about with our girls. The pay yourself first, to set it, make sure you take advantage of every matching retirement account you have at work. Put money away in a personal investment account before you pay any other bills. Make sure that you are your top priority. And I will tell you, if you get started on that when you're 20, 21 years old, through the magic of compounding, you can, even on a very modest income, you can easily have $1 million put aside by the time you're in your 50s. But you have to start young. You got to start early. And that is something that I would love to do in my next career, whenever that is. But that, it's something I've been thinking about more and more and more. Just because I think I could make a lot of money doing it, but that's not my motivation in the slightest. I just know that when you don't have any financial freedom, you don't have freedom. You are beholden to the government for getting you by. You're beholden to corporations for, keeping you in a job that you're not passionate about and all of that. If you can take care of yourself financially, that is an enormous step toward personal freedom and sovereignty. And I can think of few things professionally that would be more rewarding than to work with really young people on. And I'll give you another one. There are more boomerang kids than ever before. They go to college, they get their degree, real estate's too expensive, and they move back home. Well, if you're mom and dad, if you need the money, if you need them to pay you some rent, then that's what you do. If you don't, you still make them pay you a rent. But you say, hey, you can either give it to me as rent, or you can put it in a retirement account that you will never touch. And if your kids come up with $600-700 a month that they would have paid in rent while they're living back at home, do you know how financially set they could be by the time they're in their 30s and 40s? So that's the one thing that may someday pull me away from what I'm doing now. The reason I bring this up today is because there is a story in the news today at CBS MarketWatch on why so many 20-somethings have almost nothing in their 401k plans. And they profiled the story through the eyes of Lori Rodriguez. She's a 27-year-old communications professional, and she says she is not saving for retirement at all. She says it doesn't matter. And why? Because she believes that climate change will have catastrophic effects on our planet. And according to this story, 88% of millennials accept that climate change is happening. 69% say it will impact them in their lifetimes. And more than ever before, they're saying they're not even saving for retirement because they don't think they're going to be around for retirement because of the cataclysmic effects of climate change. You want to talk about yet another evil of this lie that's being peddled by people like Jay Inslee? But that's, again, this to them is a side benefit, because the more people do not take care of themselves, the more they need government to take care of them. So if you can convince a 27-year-old that the planet's going to be gone in 12 years because of climate change, and they accept your line of bull and live their life accordingly and don't plan for their own retirement, well, guess what? You got a Democrat for life. Because they're going to be pushing for socialism and taking other people's stuff because they didn't plan for their own life. You got to believe me. All this climate nonsense, does the climate change? Of course it does. Does anybody know the extent of man's involvement? Of course not. That has been the lie that's been peddled for about 50 years now. But this is all very carefully calculated. It's not about saving the planet. It's about turning over trillions of dollars globally to the climate forces, the politicians, their one world government that they envision. This isn't some conspiracy theory. This is absolutely what's happening. If they can convince young people to not save for retirement because they're not going to be around, another bonus for them. This is all very carefully crafted and calculated. Next up in the fastest 15, have you been back dialed into Jeopardy the last couple of nights?
Oh, so dialed in.
I cannot get enough of this James Holzhauer.
Jess and I wait for the end when he wins, and they announce it, and he tries to keep his smile closed, and then all of a sudden his teeth appear, and you're like, it's the best.
Yeah, he goes from the kind of pursed lips to he shows top and bottom teeth.
Oh, and he just
smiles.
It just like pops out, and yeah. You're like, bah!
He crossed the, I think it's 1.8 million in winnings last night, and but he is also, he told the Las Vegas Review-Journal, because that's where he's from. He's a professional sports gambler in Vegas. And he was presented the key to Las Vegas last Thursday by the mayor.
Is that not your dream?
The key, only if it actually worked.
Only if it worked on all the casinos.
Yes, if I could unlock anything in town. He's 34 years old. He's donated tens of thousands of his winnings to local charities. He just gave $10,000 to the Las Vegas Natural History Museum. He's number two all-time in Jeopardy winnings. Number one is Ken Jennings, who lives around here, who won 74 straight games back in 2004. But, this guy.
I'm so excited for him, and I just can't stand the haters.
You know what?
The other contestants looked like they had.
Did you see that guy? I don't know if it was last night or two nights ago.
Two nights ago.
Who had that? It was like a handlebar mustache that went under his chin. He looked like he despised the champ.
He did.
Yeah. He was just, it is fun to watch. I'm really into it.
And he's such an awkward guy. Yesterday, after they got done, you could tell, you know, Alex went over and was talking to the two girls, and he just wanted in on the conversation, so he kept trying to sneak over.
Yeah, I'm sure he's on the spectrum somewhere. You just get that vibe about him, but I sure enjoy it. And that there is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes of the News. Stories, Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. We're going to check the news for you, and then my old hood, the mean streets of Ballard. I'm going to talk to an apartment building owner who will tell us the impact of the drug street vagrants on her biz. It's an amazing story. It's coming up next. I have told many a tale about my old hood, the mean streets of Ballard. And as I've noted the last couple of years, when I started my radio show, I would say that in the beginning. It's the top of the hour intro to this radio show, from the mean streets of Ballard. And it was ironic, because Ballard was the most bucolic, almost Rockwell-esque when I was a kid. Just a bunch of hard-working fishermen, Scandahoovians, and I could ride my bikes all over the place. And so when I hear and see and feel what Ballard has become, it just breaks my heart, because wherever you grew up in the Puget Sound area, you know, whether you're up in Snohomish County, Pierce County, Thurston, Island, Kitsap, you've seen the same thing. You've seen this decline because of the drug vagrants. And I got an email a couple of days ago from a listener named Kim. And she said, we own an apartment building in Ballard on 58th and 22nd, 38 units. The church, located right across the street from us, is feeding and housing the addicts and homeless. The dealers have set up camp in vans on the street next to the church to supply the addicts with their drug of choice day and night. The vans have been parked in the same spaces for almost a year now. Why have they not been towed? If I parked there, I'd be towed. Probably because I have an address. The addicts roam the street, yelling and cursing into the wee hours of the morning, come onto our property, jump over tenants' decks to access units. The police have been called endless times, and of course, nothing is being done. And listener Kim joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Hey, Kim, thanks for reaching out to me like this.
Oh, you bet.
Why did you want to share the story with me and my listeners?
At the time that I sent that email, I was really frustrated because I had just received another notice that a tenant's leaving due to what's going on right in front of them and on the street. The dealing, the homeless, the parked cars, the tents, the screaming at night, just roaming around.
And you said in
Not comfortable.
Yeah, you noted in your email that it's a lovely building. You take great care of it, and this is this should be a landlord's market because I'm always told we have a housing shortage. But even with that, the drug vagrancy problem is just proven to be too much. It sounds like.
Correct.
When you reach out to the cops, what do they tell you?
They can't do anything. They've tried talking to them. They can't arrest them. Their hands are tied.
Why are their hands tied if there's open drug dealing?
Good question. I have no idea. They barely come anymore.
Right. Well, that's why, you know.
They don't even show up.
Yeah, when we see these stats, I mean, it's just insane. But the city's been trying to peddle these stats that crime is down. And anybody with an ounce of common sense knows the only reason the crime numbers are down is because people like you have just stopped calling because you know nothing's going to happen. And on the cops' end, if they're not even responding to these calls, then of course the numbers are going to go down. But that doesn't mean the crime is actually going down.
Right.
So what's the end game here? What's the end game for you? How long have you owned the apartment building?
I don't know what we're going to do.
How long have you owned the building there?
30 years. My brother-in-law built the building. It's in our family. Some of the tenants have been there for over 20 years. It means a lot to us.
Well, anytime...
When we hear and see all that's going on in the neighborhood right in front of our building, it's really hard. I have lists of complaints from tenants about what's going on in front of them. They're saying, what can be done? Can't you do something? They don't feel safe. It's causing so much tension. The neighborhood, like you said, was so lovely.
Yeah.
I mean, you could walk around day or night comfortably. But you can't anymore. And the park across the street, the Commons.
You're right.
The Ballard Commons Park on the corner.
Yeah, it's just a hellhole.
It's a gathering place now.
Yeah.
For the addicts.
Now, look, I spent a huge part of my childhood about four blocks west of you at the baseball fields at Adams Elementary, and that was my home. And I've seen what's happened, and you're right. I would have my mom couldn't care less. I would walk, ride my bike at 10 p.m., midnight in the summertime. It just wasn't a problem. I wouldn't dare let a child be loose on the streets at night there anymore.
No. And none of the tenants want to go out. They can't park on the street. There's no room for parking because of the vans parked there. But yet the city is going to spend $550,000 to install a Portland loo
right
there at the park.
Yeah, they want,
I don't get it.
They want to make it easier to be a street vagrant drug addict. And here's the thing. When you have an apartment building the size of yours, that's a business. And you've been providing a lot of tax revenues and property taxes and the income you make off of that building. And that's where I get so furious for somebody like you and your family, Kim, because you're the ones who the city should be prioritizing and caring about and making sure that you're able to continue operating your business instead of trying to make things as easy as possible for the drug vagrants, which is what the current strategy is.
Right. I know. So what happens now? You know, we're going to have to lower rents to fill the vacancies. I don't even know if we can rent the units, the ones on the first floor that look right out onto this. We're going to, you know, is this the city's plan of how to push us into affordable housing?
Yeah.
It's unreal.
I mean, I can hear the heartbreak in your voice as you describe this.
Mm-hmm.
So are you going to get out? Have you had enough of this?
No, I'm not giving up. We're not going to, you mean sell the building? No.
Yeah.
No.
You're going to keep fighting?
We're going to keep fighting. We're going to keep on going. We're going to talk to everybody. I hope we can. I don't know. It's out of control.
Yeah, it is.
And especially with the church across the street. I know they're doing what they think is right, and it's their ministry. They're serving, last year they served 80 meals a day. Now they're up to 225 meals a day.
And yet the problem on the streets keeps getting worse and worse instead of better.
It's worse and worse.
Yeah. Well, look, the reason I keep spotlighting these stories is because at some point I pray that Sandy will prevail and that we'll get some people in charge who have true compassion instead of the fake compassion that is being exhibited in all levels of government these days.
I hope so, too.
All right. Well, I appreciate you sharing your story with me, Kim, and keep me posted, okay?
Okay, thanks, Dory.
All right, take care. It's Kim, owns an apartment building in Ballard, and, she's right. They say we got to do more with housing, and yet we make it impossible for a good, clean, nice, heritage apartment building to be rented because they've just turned animals loose on the streets right in front of them. Love to hear your thoughts. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show.
My vegetables, I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
You know, I'm not very good about eating my veggies.
Brought a big brown bag of them home.
I even had a guy try to hypnotize me a few years ago to get me past my pathological detesting of vegetables. I think I know what it stems from. I actually believe that when I was about 4 or 5 years old, my mom, I don't know why she didn't just make stuff I liked, but she would make, you know, vegetables and try to force me to eat it. And even back then, I know this might be kind of hard for you to believe, I was a very strong-willed kid.
Shocking.
And so we would do this thing where, and we didn't eat as family ever. So we either had TV trays and we'd just watch in front of the television, or I'd sit at the kitchen table by myself. And she would do the, well, you're not leaving the table until your vegetables are all gone. And I said, okay, really? I'm going to sit here till 10 p.m., till midnight? And I would. I would just sit there in absolute defiance because I hated to lose at anything, even back then. And so I think out of that whole process, I grew to where I just, I, I can't even pretend to try vegetables because I got such a bad gag reflex problem. And I think it's psychologically attached to that war of wills.
So the hypnotist thing didn't work at all?
I can't be hypnotized.
I know. I don't think I could be either.
I enjoy watching good hypnotists who can actually put people under. I think it's fun to watch.
If it's real.
Yeah. I know it happened to a buddy of mine once, and I know it was real because he did things that were totally out of character. But I'm too strong-willed to be hypnotized too. Anyway, the reason I bring all this up is because cauliflower is in the news today. I didn't realize any of this, but Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she has put out a big video on social media about community gardens and that the Green New Deal, one of the reasons we need to spend trillions on the Green New Deal is because cauliflower is connected to a colonial attitude that's horrible for America. And so if we vote for the Green New Deal, we will get rid of colonialism that has led to cauliflower, and we will get to more socialist vegetables. I know it all sounds crazy, but let's see if she can explain it any better than I just did.
About it when someone really think about it. When someone says that it's too hard to do a green space that grows yucca instead of, I don't know, cauliflower or something.
Mm-hmm. I wish that I could say yucca the way she does and sound that cool. I mean, I'm not even going to try because it'd be appropriation. But I just for the record, I wish I could say yucca. Like that.
A green space that grows yucca instead of...
yucca!
I don't know. Cauliflower or something. What you're doing is that you're taking a colonial approach to environmentalism. And that is why a lot of communities of color get resistant to certain environmentalist movements. Because they come with a colonial lens on them.
Can you imagine dating her? I would just be slamming my head against the wall, trying to knock myself out before trying to listen and understand. But seriously, can you make any sense of any of this?
To certain environmentalist movements, because they come with a colonial lens on them, and it should be no surprise that that sometimes a lot of these projects don't work out occasionally.
I hope that's given you some real food for thought there, because that's really deep and heavy. We're going to check the news for you, and then the big lead at 2 is next.